Meow. And as always, if this is your first time listening, welcome. Let's just move right past that.
Yep.
Wow, I was gonna do something. I think that's like almost as alienating, which would have been backwards guy talk.
should we just record this whole podcast backwards?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we should.
It's the only thing that really makes sense here.
Let's give it a shot, and then. Well, we could do it now or we could do it later when we do our Freddy Got Fingered episode.
Yeah. Looking forward. We're going to take a sidestep and do in the middle of our Lynch run. We slip a finger in there. One of Freddy's fingers.
I mean, from one auteur to another, right?
Absolutely.
And well, yeah. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say these movies make as much sense as each other. I don't know.
Ah, hey, I like that.
All right.
well, and we'll get to our cheese helmets and our sausages.
Right.
But for now, we've got some cream corn to digest. That's right. We've finished seasons 1 and 2 of Twin Peaks. We are Rob.
Dan,
would you walk with me?
Only comma, if there's fire involved.
Okay, we're watching the movie, and well, we've watched the movie and the missing pieces, a collection of deleted scenes. Which I will say, if you've seen the film and not watched the deleted scenes, highly recommend them for fans of knowing what's going on at all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Some questions definitely get answered.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And joining us to discuss this is the sort of Philip Jeffries of the elephant. Or no, this isn't the Elephant Man. This is Antoine Peaks.
This is right. Antoine
Peaks. Melissa Jobin, welcome back.
Hi. yeah, I guess I am like Philip Jeffries.
You're kind of the Philip Jeffries here. You show up screaming on fire.
Right.
And then you show up.
Yeah.
And then
you talk some nonsense and then you just disappear. And here's
the thing. Every time our listeners hear you, they soil their pants.
Yeah.
In it, positively, it's a good thing.
Right, in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah,
of course.
So we're going to be talking about Fire Walk With Me from, was this 1992?
Two.
And The Missing Pieces from much later, like 2016, I want to say.
It was 2014, I think I read.
That could be right.
Stay in your lane, Melissa. No,
no, you're right.
It is 2014.
It is 2014. Yeah, you're right.
Of course not shot in 2014.
Of course not.
And I have to imagine was available for people to watch, just not all like put together like that. I have to imagine.
Maybe as like DVD bonuses or something.
Yeah, like that was never, those scenes were never seen until they put them together and made a whole second movie out of them.
I remember people talking about The Missing Pieces, kind of how Dan was just talking about it, where they were like, oh my God, this answers so many questions from the movie that nobody had any idea, you know, what was going on for 22 damn years.
This would have been so helpful. What's so crazy to me is like, okay, so.
Yeah, what's crazy to you, Dan?
Yeah.
Let's get right into it.
Okay, yes. No. Well, what's crazy to me is like, so Fire Walk With Me could not have gotten a big release, right?
It did.
It did. No, it was the whole traditional movie rollout, I believe.
Right. I mean, it went to
McDonald's tie-in, Happy Meal tie-in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were giving out rings.
You get a commemorative glass that where you go to drink it, but it's solid. Yeah. And only when you pour it out away from your mouth is it liquid again.
No, this... I think it was at Cannes or Cannes.
Yeah,
it was.
And I did see that there are some mixed opinions on whether or not the movie was booed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what a thing to not be certain about.
Right, it,
right.
I could see that being a bit of a retcon though, because okay, I'll grant you this: the movie had a wide theatrical release, but surely it bombed.
Oh, surely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it did not do well.
Yeah.
A movie that's basically like an insert for a TV show that's happening way over there.
It's a prequel to a TV show that ended on a cliffhanger. And
unceremoniously.
Yeah. Unceremoniously was canceled on a cliffhanger. A year later, David Lynch is like, I'm putting out the Twin Peaks movie, Fire Walk With Me. And people have to imagine that they're going to get some closure. Dale Cooper is possessed by Bob. What the fuck? And then they go to see this and they're like, come on, what is this?
I mean, in no way is it satisfying. Even if you're there like, oh, well, I love David Bowie. That's cool that he's here. And then he walks in
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's there for 30 seconds going, howdy, y'all. This is no Thin White Duke or whatever his name is.
Yeah, and then you watch The Missing Pieces and you're like, oh, that, wow, there's more of him. But it's that scene where the guy shits his pants. Like, that's really the most extra of him that you get.
Well, there is extra him, like, explaining where he's been, which they do, like, you can hear the audio in the movie, but it's over, like, a lot of other things going on. It's kind of hard to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to.
They do give us that extra scene where he like lays his head on the desk because he's so overwhelmed.
Yeah. Oh boy. Let me just tell you, it's been a wild couple of years.
I did like that. Like he seemed like in the theatrical cut, he seems kind of just like a. Not like Wyndham Earl, but similarly just like completely fried. Like he's just like off the reservation a little bit, right?
Totally.
Like he's just like deranged.
Yeah.
But this, it's just like, this guy's going through a lot. He can't.
He's over his head so much.
Oh, yeah.
His head's over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And
you really get a full sense of how he like almost didn't mean to get involved this much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that is sort of like the overarching thing with this movie. That's really cool is like you get a sense of just how not in control all of our human characters are.
Totally.
Right. Like they are just, and like Laura, especially, right. Like the whole thing with the show is like, it's the myth of Laura and like sort of peeling that back little by little. But this is like, I mean, I found this to be a very unpleasant time at the movies.
Yeah.
This is like,
this
is so fucking heavy. And my goodness, Cheryl Lee.
Yeah.
Performance of a lifetime. Give her the Oscar.
Seriously. We get in the TV show or whatever, there's like some like flashbacks of Laura. And then we have Cheryl Lee playing Maddie, of course. But there's never really like an extended, you know, really scenes with Laura.
Right.
And to see this, the way that the show starts with like everybody sort of like, you know, they're all in love with Laura and she's the homecoming queen. And how could this possibly happen? And then you watch this and you're like, Jesus Christ.
Totally. Right. Like the sort of like reframing of like. The way people feel about Laura, like after she's dead, it becomes this very sort of like, romanticized.
Yeah. I mean, that's what,
whereas
happened.
Here it's like just sleazy and horny and carnal.
Yeah.
Like even the stuff with like, God help me, Jacoby. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Which that's a deleted scene.
That is a deleted scene. Yeah.
But yes.
That's a piece. Should have stayed missing.
Right. Just him being like the realization that he's like, you got, I need more tapes. babe, I need more tapes. How, tell me you love me.
It was like 10 p.m. and he calls her and he's just like, I need to hear your voice.
Yeah,
and
right.
So weird.
Very unprofessional.
Very.
Doctor.
Maybe the least professional thing about him.
Yeah. I know. I do like how it kind of recontextualizes a lot of the characters here. Where like,
yeah, like, do you? Because I know you didn't like Bobby, Dan. I know you didn't really like Bobby in the original. Do you feel more?
Yeah, how do you feel about Bobby now? Well, yeah, I mean,
okay. I'll tell you.
By the end of season two, I feel like Bobby has sort of like straightened his shit out a little bit. And then, you know, this obviously goes back to before season one when he's like, full dipshit mode.
Yeah, the whole time we were watching the show, we had no idea that he had just killed a guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Which, like, I do think the funeral scene, right? Like, that was the thing I thought of as that was all playing out. How, like, it's one thing if he kills someone and Laura's there and then Laura dies, right? Like, that's heavy enough.
Sure.
But for her to also be like mocking him the whole time and to never get closure on that.
Yeah.
Like it's such an interesting little wrinkle to add in. Like,
And he was pretty much only buying and dealing cocaine so that Laura had a supply.
Yeah.
Like, right. I mean, like,
it was not a lucrative operation he was running. He was basically just like giving Laura $5,000 worth of cocaine at a time. That was his whole plan, was to just keep asking different coke dealers for $5,000 worth of cocaine.
Yeah.
So to answer your question,
he's not the smartest.
No, but he's got a big heart, doesn't he? To answer your question of how I feel about him, I mean, by the end of the series, I felt like he had kind of spun his wheels more than anybody, right? Like, he has that one moment with his dad, which, of course, is like a high point of the show. Uh-huh. But by the end of the series, I mean, he's like being fake Ben Horn and
forgot about that.
Actually. Coaching Shelly to win
the
Miss Twin Peaks contest. And they have like that one little moment at the diner where they're just like sweet on each other or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But, also, Shelly kissed Gordon Cole. Yeah, and that made Bobby realize that he had to straighten up.
Yeah.
And fly away.
Well, this has been the subject of much debate on this show.
that did they kiss or not? Did they actually kiss or not? Like, did the actor, you know, did David Lynch and Matt Jedamic, did they actually touch lips? Because you don't, there isn't like an actual shot of them kissing. It's like at a, you know, kind of an unusual camera angle and they go in, but you don't see any contact.
That's true.
So the first time I watched, I mean, we talked about this, but the first time I watched it through, I'm like, David Lynch, you sleazeball. You just wanted to smooch up Matt Jedamic.
Well, I think, I mean, if that's true, right? Uh-huh. If they don't actually kiss, then that makes like James Hurley suddenly feels like a little bit more of a David Lynch surrogate.
Oh,
where
no,
it's like,
yeah,
he gets there, right? He gets all the way there. And then as soon as like the opportunity is present, he's like, forget this.
Yeah, I mean, we just watched Wild at Heart, right? Which is a sexy movie. Very horny.
And have you seen that, Melissa?
I have not.
You got to throw it on when we're done. Yeah. It's so good. It like instantly became one of my favorite David Lynch movies.
Yeah, it's real good.
But I do want to watch it.
Yeah, Lynch has like a weird, you know, he's got his weird little, you know,
he's
sexual
a boy.
Picadillos. Yeah,
it's, you know, it's who he is.
Yeah. Come on.
What do you want him to, not be horny?
Yeah, come on.
What
come
kind
on.
Of show, what kind Frank of show Booth, would come on. Be if that's the case?
I for one, would be disappointed. You know what's funny is like his like passion project that never gets made was a Ronnie Rocket.
Yeah.
Is the least sexual thing I've ever heard of. Like, do you know the premise of Ronnie Rocket?
I I don't remember what it is. Go ahead.
Well, and I'm just going to use Wikipedia here to tell you that it's the story of a detective seeking to enter a mysterious second dimension. Aided by his ability to stand on one leg, he is being obstructed on this quest by a strange landscape of odd rooms and a mysterious train while being stalked by the Donut Men, who wield electricity as a weapon.
Wow.
Yeah. Nothing horny about that.
Well, no, but also
says you.
As I'm listening,
I mean, to Donut
that,
Men. Yeah.
Come on.
Outside of the Donut Men, that's all very Twin Peaks.
Totally.
Yeah, very Twin Peaks adjacent.
Yeah.
Yeah. People, even down to people walking weird, standing on one leg.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
you want to get into it?
I think we kind of have to get into it, and I posit to you now, we don't talk about these things. Our billable hours are only while we're recording, so I think we weave the missing pieces in as they come up.
I was thinking the same thing, because it doesn't really make sense to talk about the missing pieces afterwards, like sort of separated from the context that they were should have been
be
in
like,
there, whatever.
What the heck happened with Philip Jeffries? We'll tell you in 40 minutes. No, that's stupid.
Yeah. So right off the bat, again, I think it's so funny. Like 1992, somebody goes to see this movie and they're like, I love Dale Cooper. I love the characters of Twin Peaks. Let's go.
Do you love Chris Isaac, not his music?
How do you feel about Chris Isaac's acting career? Yeah.
I like that David Lynch is sort of drawn to. Would you call Chris Isaac and David Duchovny roughly the same type of actor, which is to say quiet and big pouty lips?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And like they both have sort of interesting noses as well.
Mm. I like that he has a boy type too, seemingly.
He does have
definitely
has a boy type.
Yeah, so we get Chris Isaac. But this is technically our second Chris Isaac in a row. And we had that song called on the soundtrack?
Wild
at Heart.
Wicked Games.
Wicked Games.
Which is like, that's his big, you know, song. That's, you know, what he, I think, is most known for is that song in particular. And trying to kiss Cameron Diaz at the MTV Movie Awards. You know about that?
He tried and failed?
Yeah, him and Cameron Diaz were presenting the award for Best Kiss at the MTV Awards. And
he's like, last minute entry, babe.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and he like, you know, wasn't planned or anything. And he just tries to like, you know, fucking kiss her right there, and she's like not having it, and he's like, come on, baby. And this is all like up on stage at the podium. And it's a pretty disgusting clip. But then Jim Carrey wins the award or whatever, and he goes up on stage and he immediately grabs Chris Isaac and kisses him.
That's good.
Yeah Which sort of like cools the whole situation, but also gets him back because he's kind of a creep.
Guy's a pro.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey, I mean.
Yeah.
Chris Isaac. I mean, look, we are, of course, big Chris Isaac fans.
Yeah. I mean, stay tuned for our podcast, Chris Isaac.
No, we've done that before.
Oh, okay.
No, we've discussed his work before.
What, his movie career?
Yeah. He's Uncle Bob.
Oh, of course he's Uncle Bob.
He's the engineer.
He records the
That Thing You Do.
Yeah, the original recording of That Thing You Do.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy's uncle in the church when they record. Yeah, and he quotes scripture at him.
And Jimmy's like, can we get another take? And he's like, no, I think that one was perfect.
Poor Jimmy.
Yeah, Jimmy doesn't get what he wants.
Yeah. but yes, let's talk about another tragic figure. of course, Special Agent Chester Desmond.
Chester.
Chet to his friends.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget Sam.
Oh, we'll get to Sam. Of course, yeah, we'll get to Sam.
We're going
to
get to Sam. So,
Sam Stanley.
Sam Stanley. Yeah.
Great name.
We're what introduced to Chris Isaak's character, Chet Desmond, as he is, looks like arresting, him and some other agents are arresting a bus driver with, you know,
Seemingly a beloved bus driver, because yeah, the kids are very upset.
He's a school bus driver, and all of the kids in the bus are screaming and yelling, like, not to take their bus driver away. And
it happens every day.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you remember when you were a kid how loyal you felt to your bus driver? Yeah.
Okay, actually, there was one bus driver that was also a radio DJ for like an AM radio station, and I was loyal to that bus driver.
That's pretty cool.
Was his name Otto?
Did he call you Bartman?
Did he love to get Blotto?
I was actually talking about this with my sister like a couple days ago. She was like, she had mentioned some like bus driver that everybody loved. I was like, I don't remember having a bus driver I loved. I just remember there was a bus driver who every kid on the bus would do an impression of when she got mad.
Yeah.
Like everyone had their own sit down. You know?
Yeah.
What a miserable life. That's
it's gotta be the worst. Yeah.
I have nothing but
especially
empathy
these days.
These kids and their screens, and their Fortnite devices,
their skibbity toilets.
Skibbity toilets, okay.
I actually like skibbity toilet.
We'll have to have you back on for the skibbity toilet. What? Could you imagine?
So Chet Desmond, he gets a call from Gordon Cole, tells him that he's got a
blew right past it.
Oh no. Let's imagine.
I wonder what it would be like if we did skibbity toilet podcasts. No, I'm sorry. Okay.
I think it would be popular.
Do Zoomers listen to podcasts?
I actually don't know.
I don't think they do. I think we'd have to go on live stream and go, ice cream, gang, gang.
Or you'd have to have like a split screen where the other side is just like a Minecraft, like someone just jumping.
Yeah.
Someone just running really fast in Minecraft.
Yeah. You have to do like a full, you know, we're recording this video, but like you need like a full production studio to record in, and then you post it on YouTube, and then the kids watch.
Yeah, and then every 10 seconds we gotta stop and be like, thanks for the like the blank coin.
Yeah.
You know, hey, what's up, we got green M&M in the chat, what's up, thanks for the blank coin. Oh, God. I want to show you why I said green M&M, because just off camera.
I got
green M&M as the Statue of Liberty showing a little leg.
Yeah, sexy green M&M as the Statue of Liberty. Whoa, Dan.
Just a little checkup. Just did a little checkup on the green M&M there. Everything's looking ship shape.
Gross.
Okay, so Agent Chet Desmond, he's arresting a bus driver and some sex workers, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
We get no backstory into what is going on here, which is perfect. It's better this way.
It's a classic Twin Peaks one of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A non sequitur.
Yeah.
But he gets a call from Gordon Cole, says, you gotta head up to Deer Meadow, Washington. There's been a murder, and he's got to go investigate it, and he's got to meet
Sam Stanley,
of course,
Mr. Stanley.
So Sam Stanley, Gordon Cole, and then Chet Desmond arrives at the airport, and Gordon says, "I have a surprise for you," and.
And I think we all know where this is going. I think we all know what comes next. That's right.
Yeah.
It's Lil the Dancer.
It's Lil the Dancer. A woman named Lil She comes out from behind like an airplane. She does like a little dance kind of thing.
She's
scrunches
goofy.
Her face.
She's making a sour lemon face.
Yep. She keeps like opening and closing her fist.
She's wearing a red dress with like interesting hemming.
Yes. And then
of course, she's got a blue rose pinned to her. Is it a lapel area?
Yeah.
It's where the lapel would be.
Yeah. And of course, and we have no idea what's going on here. But luckily, neither does Sam Stanley.
You didn't?
Oh, you fucking idiot. Well, I guess somebody wasn't paying attention.
I guess someone's not cut out to work at the bureau.
Yeah, to handle blue rose cases.
Sam Stanley, by the way, we should mention, is Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, big important detail.
Playing against type, I would say.
I think, I don't know, man. He'll pull like a weird character like that. Like, this is such a kind of small character for him, right? Like, what we know him, of course, from Stand By Me and things like The Lost Boys.
And Leather Jacket. Type and of course Phone Booth.
Of course,
who could forget Phone Month? Hey, remember when someone stepped on our toes with Phone Month?
Yeah, somebody else tried to fucking muscle in on our Phone Month territory.
I have never been so mad in my entire life, Melissa. Someone tweeted, they were like, as though they had thought of it. They were like, hey. Remember in the early 2000s when Larry Cohen made two back-to-back thrillers about phone calls? It's like, yes, of course I do.
Yeah, we did a whole month on it. What are you?
A whole month.
What are you talking about?
Like, yeah, remember it? I invented Larry Cohen making two movies back-to-back about phone calls.
There's this other movie with Kiefer Sutherland, Dark City, where he plays an even like weirder, sort of creepier kind of guy against type, though. Like,
he's
not
really good at playing against type in that way, I think. Where
he's always
you throw
against
him
his
a
type.
Weird guy and he nails it.
Yeah,
he really does.
Because I'm going to say, you said creepier. I don't find this guy creepy. I was so endeared to him. He was like,
Yeah.
He's just like a cute little guy.
He has a cute little tie. He's just like,
the least threatening man who's ever lived. Like,
yes.
He also likes
Chet Desmond.
Yeah. They won't let him in on the blue rose cases because he's too pure. Like,
exactly. Yeah. It would.
He can't go the way of Philip Jeffries. Yeah.
Talk about getting your soul annihilated. It would be on site.
Yeah. Get fucking Black Lodged on site. God. Gordon Cole also tells Sam to stay close, Chet Desmond, he's a good guy and has his own MO. That's modus operandi.
Sam runs with that. He says it like three times.
Yeah,
he does. Just learned a new phrase. You kidding me?
Yeah. So Chet and Sam, they go to the local police station and these guys are not helpful at all.
Oh, man. It's so good. Yeah. So they get in and the receptionist and a deputy sort of meet them there. And it's that thing I love that I first saw in The Big Lebowski where everybody in the room is laughing except for the character you're following.
Yeah. And like they're laughing at something and you're like, I don't know what they're laughing at and I feel left out.
Yeah.
Just like this main character here.
Totally. Yeah. And they're like whispering things to each other and the laughter re-swells.
Yeah.
And they're basically like, you cannot see the sheriff.
right.
So then they, they sort of muscle their way past and the sheriff, well, he's normal too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just a regular, normal looking guy. He has a picture on his wall of him bending an iron bar. Yes. Because he won a bending an iron bar contest.
The only entry.
Yeah. No, and so Desmond is like, I want to see the body, Teresa Banks, and all this stuff. And this guy is not cooperating at all. And he's like, listen, man, I am like, it's the FBI's territory now. Like, this has gone federal. Your, you know, your little fucking shit splat town is no longer in charge of this.
Damn.
Yeah, he fucking.
He had to lay it down like that.
He did. This guy's trying to fucking.
Kept calling him a J. Edgar.
He did keep calling him a J. Edgar.
He did. Desmond and Stanley, they're examining Teresa Banks's body. And we heard about Teresa Banks in the show. Early on, they talked about when they found Laura, they said that there was another murder like this, you know, about a year earlier, Teresa Banks, yada, yada. But we didn't get any sort of information really of like what had happened. So they're examining the body. They notice she's missing a ring. There's like a line, you know, on her finger.
Tan line sort of thing.
Yeah. And then Sam Stanley he's looking at her fingernail under like it's like this, it's like a microscope, but it's enormous. And
is it the thing he's wearing?
Portable. It's like portable. Yeah. He's like carrying a suitcase almost.
Right.
And yeah. It's like a little mini fridge that he's been wearing around his neck the whole
exactly
time.
Exactly like that.
He's very proud of it. He showed it off to Coop in one of the missing pieces.
Yeah. He did.
That's his whole. I mean, that's how he's gonna get noticed around the bureau.
Hey, wait, real quick, can you hear this? Or no?
No.
Sirens?
Okay, good. No, no, no.
Well, that's on my end. There's nothing I can do about that.
All right. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't coming through the speakers here.
What was it?
No,
he's got picture in picture of pornography.
I have to have the movie going like in the background.
That's your process?
It is.
Wow. So you're moving us along in real time.
Well, yeah,
or you're trying.
I jump, you know, we'll jump ahead or whatever. And, you know, anything that's like, I mean, there's not really a lot that's superfluous in this, but, you know, whatever. So Sam Stanley, he sees something under her nail, peels back the nail, and there's a little piece of paper with the letter T on it.
By the way.
Gross. How gross that was?
Gross.
Yeah.
Look, I love the I love how off the leash we are now that we're off network television.
Hell yeah.
In some ways. Oh, horrible, horrible, horrible thing.
Dan.
What a horrible thing to happen.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
No.
Worse than any of the stuff that happens to people who are alive in this is me having to watch a fake depiction of someone getting their nail.
Ugh. Yeah, a dead woman getting her nail removed. yeah, so the letter T under there. And of course, we've seen this in the TV show. This is the killer's sort of his MO. He places a letter under the fingernail of his victims. And
of course, we know he's spelling Robert.
Oof, take it easy.
We do.
No, you're right.
There.
No, 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 you're right.
We know that.
No, we know that.
It doesn't even happen in the movie.
No, it doesn't.
No, no, it doesn't.
It happened months ago.
Yeah, it did.
Well, technically, it happens a year from now.
Oh, my God. You were both here when it happened. You're both here.
Yeah. So after they're done examining the body, Sam Stanley is like, where are we going to sleep tonight? And Desmond is just like, we're not.
We're
going to get food. I was like, you do have your own ammo.
Also, can I just point out how fun it is that this town is such a mirror opposite Twin Peaks, where the police are mean. They don't even make fresh coffee.
Oh, it's everything. This, you know, Deer Meadow here is the exact opposite. You could call it the doppelganger to Twin Peaks.
Okay. You have,
all right.
Say that.
Well, so you have, of course, you have the police station, right? With the cops who are, you know, assholes. The woman working the desk is, you know, the Lucy analog, who is also like kind of a shithead. They go to Hap's Diner, where like the woman that works there is like kind of, she's like, you know, she's like an old diner waitress. She's like, you know, she's smoking cigarettes behind the fucking counter and like,
yep,
you know.
I mean, even the name of the town, like Meadow Flat Peaks.
Yeah. True.
Short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think like the bending of the iron
mm-hmm.
feels like part of the unwoodenness of the town.
Mm.
Right. That's like obviously all the
steel mill town.
Right. Yeah. And like, I mean, the sheriff's name is Sheriff Cable. obviously the electrical currents are going to become a thing here.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to get ganged up on by saying more about that too soon.
What?
Two of you put a gag order on me because I mentioned Robert. Something from 19 years ago.
When they go to Hap's Diner, they talk to the owner, who, I mean, we could talk about the electricity in this scene right
oh,
here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The guy fixing
you
the
You mean
lamp.
Between Chris Isaac and the actor who plays the owner?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could feel it coming off of the screen, these guys.
But it also could have been the lamp.
Yeah. That
right.
Somebody is like working, like there's a lamp repair person there who is, you know, they're trying to fix it. And it's, like you just see like the white flashes
yeah.
of electricity going on.
And it does create sort of like a soft strobing effect, which
we know is bad.
Mm-hmm. You don't ever want strobe lights.
No, you don't want that.
The anti-rave undercurrents of this.
So they talk to forget the woman's name. The waitress.
I want to say it's Irene.
I believe it is Irene. Yes, because you can't say goodnight, Irene.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they ask her about, because Teresa Banks used to work at this diner. She says that, you know, Teresa only worked there for a month. You know, she thinks that, you know, she was always late. She thinks that she had a problem with Coke. And she says there was this one time where for 3 days, she said that her arm didn't work, and which is, I mean, that's an unusual thing. Let's put that away in our pockets for later.
Can't forget the time that everybody's arms stopped working in Twin Peaks.
Well, there was that one time where Cooper and Pete and maybe somebody else, their arms did go funny.
Yes.
They started shaking.
We did have some arm funniness. But also, Teresa's, well, no, I won't get ahead. That would be getting
no,
ahead.
No.
I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but I was going to bring up the ring. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could, we're getting there now anyway. So, like, after the, I mean, is there anything else in the diner specifically besides the Teresa Banks info? We get that old guy with his like French younger friend there.
Mm-hmm.
And she says something in French to the effect
La
of like,
nuit est le bon moment.
Yeah, which is like the nighttime is good. Or like,
yeah, the nighttime is the right time, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is all that happens in the diner.
Yeah. So then they go to the trailer park. Which is, again, this is like a mirror, you know, instead of a big fucking, you know, like a really nice neighborhood like Laura is mm-hmm. from, like a beautiful suburb, or the fucking hotel, the Great Northern.
Sure. You know, or huge. Honestly, even like those little, that little complex where what's his name lives, the guy, the shut-in.
I forget his name. I'm drawing a blank.
Where they go for Meals
Harold.
On Wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
Harold, yeah. Like, even that is so much nicer than this, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's called the Fat Trout Trailer Park.
Fat Trout, yeah.
Yes.
That's also a good moment when Sam is like, are you speaking in code to me right now?
Yeah.
He thinks this is another Blue Rose type situation.
No, I'm speaking plainly to you, Sam. So yeah, they go there and they
wake up the owner, who very, very, very clearly does not want to be awake.
Yeah. He has a sign on his door that says, "Do not wake me up before 9 o'clock." And it's, I love their reaction.
They go for their guns.
Yeah. They're like, oh shit, it's before 9.
and that guy, of course, is played by Harry Dean Stanton.
Of course.
Of course. Good for us. This is our second HDS in a row also.
Yeah. He's, I kind of want to watch Wild at Heart
again. I'll tell you what, Harry Dean Stanton and Chris Isaac, those two are inseparable.
I don't want to spoil too much, but there's actually a lot more of him in The Return.
Thank God, man. Yeah. Thank God. And tell me, does he look the same age somehow?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
Does he look the age he's looked since he was 35 years old?
It's so funny to see, like, you watch the show and he's clearly like an old man. Mm. But you watch this and you're like, this is a cool 30 years earlier.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's got a little bit more like brown in his hair, and that's about it. That's the only difference. They want to see Teresa Banks's trailer. So they go in and they're looking around, and Desmond sees a picture of Teresa on the fridge, and she's wearing the ring. Now, Dan, you wanted to talk about the ring. Let's get into it.
Well, just looking for theories as to why her arm could have gone numb for 3 days.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, that's actually a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Ring could have been too tight.
Yeah.
Cut off circulation. Yeah. Nothing strange or unusual about it.
Nope. Pretty normal stuff.
But the ring has a certain marking on it that we recognize from Owl Cave.
Yep.
It's a glyph of an owl.
Yes.
But it's like a diamond with like two little wings coming off the bottom, basically.
Yeah. 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 And while they're there, there's a woman who shows up. She's covered in soot and she has like an ice pack on her face. And she doesn't say anything.
She hobbles in. She looks around and she hobbles away.
David Lynch, big fan of a filthy woman not saying anything, showing up and disappearing.
You're damn right. I think, you know, once we get into The Return a little bit.
Then we can talk more about the filthy old woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the same lady comes back?
No.
No.
Oh, just more scary.
Yeah, more filth.
Okay. Is it scary? Is it going to be a Mulholland Drive situation for me?
Oh, it's scary.
It's pretty scary. It's like,
I mean, that one guy is scary.
Oh, that one guy is horrifying.
No.
Anyway.
I will tell you that it's honestly pretty fucked up.
It's this whole moment here, so Chet Desmond asks the lady, like, did you know Teresa Banks? And she doesn't say anything. She just sort of like backs out of the door and like walks away. When Harry Dean Stanton sees her in the doorway, he just sort of like stops and stares at her, and then when she walks away, he's still kind of frozen in that spot. And you can see his eyes are sort of welling up with tears. And then, Desmond is just like, he's looking at him and they just sort of like, they go on with it. But like, there's definitely a moment there where something is going on with Harry Dean Stanton. Carl Rod is his name. Of course.
Of course. I just, honestly, this is my dumb guy reading of that moment. Uh-huh. I thought they had beaten each other up because he also has a head wound.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
but
it's
maybe
possible.
It's just game recognized game in terms of having head wounds.
No, there's a lot that will make sense about that interaction.
Yeah. You know how, like, this movie and The Missing Pieces. Well, yeah. But you know how this and The Missing Pieces sort of like clears up some questions you had about the series. Same thing with like season 3 really sort of like answers more of the bigger sort of questions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would actually say that season 3, like, there's so many things in Firewalk with Me and in The Missing Pieces that rewatching it to, you know, to talk about it, I was like, oh, that there's so much foreshadowing and there's so much like stuff that you're like, okay, I kind of understand that this is a recurring theme, and it gets kind of just like blown open in The Return.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is all, I mean, that's all just so fucking great. Like, all of that stuff to be like, you know, to make the 2 seasons of the show and then to make a movie that's like, all right, we're gonna fit this in right before the show starts, and things that we talked about in the show are gonna pay off in the movie, and then in 25 years we're gonna make another series and it's gonna answer even more questions, and it's gonna be, people are gonna fucking eat it up, they're gonna podcast about it
5 years after it was released.
That's right.
Yeah, it's crazy to look at this, and like, I know we've bagged on like Lost and that type of show a lot,
sure.
But like the way that this is able to actually execute on the like the surreal imagery and then like paying it off later, you know, like the things happen out of context and then it fills it in because there was always a plan.
Yeah.
It's just very nice to see.
Yeah, and I did read that David Lynch had intended to make a trilogy of films, and this was supposed to be the first one. Mm. And it did so poorly and people hated it so much that he never got to make the other two.
Well, yeah, Mulholland Drive originally started as a like a spinoff of Twin Peaks, where it was supposed to be Audrey going to Hollywood, basically.
Audrey, by the
that
way,
makes so much sense.
I read that Sherilyn Fenn, that's her name, right?
Yeah.
She refused, or she turned down being in this movie because she didn't like the way that the show ended.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, I'm not doing more of that shit.
She didn't like that she got blown up. She didn't like being the victim of a cartoon bomb.
No, I guess not.
Who can blame her?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, also, Laura Flynn Boyle isn't in this either, which...
I gotta say, Donna?
Yeah.
Better. By
Laura Donna. Kelly, I think, it's like, it's a totally different sort of performance, where this, Moira Kelly's portrayal of Donna feels much more like a young sort of innocent girl who is, you know, being corrupted or whatever by her friend.
Her portrayal of Donna made the character make more sense to me.
Sure.
I agree.
I did not understand Donna at all during the first 2 seasons.
What doesn't work about Laura Flynn Boyle, you get it, is that she's so obviously an insane person in real life.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, like, even watching the show and like looking at her, you're like, you look like not a crazy person, but like, I don't know, somebody who, you know, maybe has been at a party with their face in a big pile of cocaine. You know?
Sure. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess crazy in the way of like what. Like someone who's wanted to be an actor their whole life. Like,
yeah.
The narcissism
of a actor, crazy person, you mean? Like, totally. not a schizophrenic, but like a, yeah, just self-centered
narcissist.
Also,
yeah.
Also, Laura Flynn Boyle, like at playing Donna, like reads to me as like a 35-year-old woman.
Big time. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
So like, seeing Moira Kelly playing her, I'm like, this is a teenage girl. Like,
yes.
I can finally believe that.
Also, Moira Kelly, the voice of Nala.
Nala.
King.
Oh, that's right.
From Donna to Nala. The Moira Kelly story. By the way, what kind of name is Larflin? Right?
What's that, like Nordic? Some sort of like Swedish thing?
Laura Flynn Boyle.
Huh.
I think I saw Dr. Pimple Popper remove one of those ones. A Laura Flynn Boyle. I think I saw that on Instagram. On my reels. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it there. That's where I saw it.
Oh, is that where you saw it?
Yeah, it was on Dr. Pimple Popper's account, or maybe it was a repost.
I think that's a good place to take a break.
Aw. And here I feel like I'm just hitting my stride. Look at us.
I don't have to slam the e-brake on your...
Yeah, seriously, look at us. We're all having a good time. We're smiling. We're larfling. It's good.
We are larfling.
Okay, yeah. You know what? I want a drink.
Hell yeah.
A seltzer water. But I gotta go get it.
Yeah, I gotta go get some water also.
All right. Okay. Guys, so if you want to continue listening... head on over to patreon.com/kingmepod. We're going to be talking about the rest of Fire Walk With Me and the missing pieces.
And I will say, not to like, you know, no pressure, obviously, but this one seems like it's going to go along. This one might be worth, this might be the one you want to sign up for the free trial on.
Yeah, we're 50 minutes into the record and about 20 minutes into the movie. So
tops.
Do the math.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back.